Hello, welcome to episode 47 of Extra Sequential, hosted out of Perth, Western Australia. My name's Mladen.
My name is Chris, and a couple of weeks ago we had our Green Lantern-focused episode in which I attempted to educate young Mladen about all things Green Lantern and Power Ring related, and the tables have been turned, so Mladen is going to teach me all about Swamp Thing, who's also a Green-related inspired superhero.
Green as in environmental awareness, probably. It's a fascinating character with a long history, which we'll be sort of dipping our toes into. It won't be... won't be covering everything, trust us, folks. It'll just be giving you a taste of what's the deal with that Swamp Thing guy and maybe giving you a feeling for why I think he's awesome. Usually at this point, we go into the news.
We talked about a while ago about the anime series that Marvel are doing, and
that's right.
The clip has just been released for the Iron Man anime. It originally ran on Japan's Animax network, and it airs in America on the 29th of July.
Okay.
So it's 12 episodes. So it's obviously got, well, if you watch the cameo, you'll see a Wolverine cameo who looks like he's one of the cast of Twilight rather than his usual rugged, manly self.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at when we were discussing X-Men cartoons, yeah. How he looked kind of wrong.
Yeah. He does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's not very threatening. He looks like he's going to, you know... grab a microphone and start singing that baby baby or something. But
It's interesting because he looks a lot better in their X-Men anime, which they made very recently. He looks pretty good in that. And then this one, he looks kind of like anime pretty boy kind of thing. So, yeah.
Yes. But I'm interested to see the Iron Man series. Hopefully we get it here in Australia, and I'm sure it'll be followed by a DVD release later on the year as well. But talking about Marvel, they're also releasing, apparently, and this has come up a few times before over the last year, 10-minute short films, right. Basically as a way to introduce their lesser-known characters into the general populace. And there's just been a report from the website FilmScore Rejects that they've already been shot with Clark Gregg. He's the guy that plays Agent Coulson in all the Marvel films.
Right.
So he's one of the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents in the two Iron Man and in Thor.
Ah, so it's going to tie into those. That's clever.
Yeah, so we don't know what characters or others are going to be appearing. They won't be released theatrically, but they'll be on the DVD and Blu-ray releases. So we know that Thor is being released on September 30th. Also out this week is Kenneth Branagh won't be directing the second Thor film, which I think is 2013.
Yeah.
The 10-minute short films will also be in the Captain America First Avenger DVD Blu-ray when that debuts at the end of the year. So it's a good idea, and I thought that something like this should be done for a while. DC actually do similar thing with their animated films.
Yeah.
They'll always put a short animated feature before their main. They stopped doing that, unfortunately, but there's about half a dozen of them now.
On the DVDs, yeah, that's right.
So there's focusing on Green Arrow, Captain Marvel, or different, the Spectre was in there and was in one. So, it's a good idea. So, and Marvel have, you know, characters like Ant-Man in development and Doctor Strange and Black Panther, people that, you know, I suppose most people wouldn't know who Thor was either until the film came out. So this is a good way of introducing perhaps the lesser known Marvel characters out of their thousands.
Fantastic. The other item of news that we both saw this week and we were kind of, well, I know my own opinion of it is that just sort of mild bewilderment. Obviously, the DC relaunch has been on everyone's radar this last couple of months, or is it at least a month by this point?
1 month.
And people still won't shut up about it, but a group of crybaby Nancy boys have decided they're going to picket and demonstrate at the Comic-Con for this year against this DC relaunch. Because they think that makes a difference. I don't know. So far, they've got something like 200 people who are going to take part in this protest against what they see as changing the costumes and the personalities and the histories of their favorite characters for the worst. I think that about sums that up. But what do you think about these people, Chris?
I admire their passion, but I don't think they'll be noticed in 130,000 attendants.
That's what I noticed, yeah. Like, oh, only 200 of you.
But I'm interested to see the photos and what kind of banners and placards, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Put undies back on soups. You know, I don't know what the placards are going to say, but good on them. I mean, it's good that people are passionate about these things, but obviously it's too late to make a difference anyway. The new previews is out this week and all the September releasing titles of this relaunch.
Obviously, yeah.
Obviously, nothing's going to stop it. But
the only thing that'll stop it is if it's a huge disaster and then they go back to the traditional one and then they – but, you know, that'll be a huge boost in sales of issues because people were like, yay, they went back to the old comics. So maybe that's their plan all along, you know, new Coke style.
Yeah. Maybe. Also, sticking with the DC relaunch news, there's just been a video released. It's only 3.5 minutes long, but it's made from DC. You can see it on The Source, their official blog, mm-hmm. thesource.com. But basically, there's also a new dedicated website, a dedicated website related to all 52 new series. You can see what the characters are in the previous coverage and whatnot, which is quite good. So basically this video is just Jim Lee, Dan Didio, Grant Morrison and a few other writers and editors talking about the relaunch, and it's no new information. It's no new artwork.
Yeah.
And they've kind of got like little slight motion comic graphic-y things going on in the background.
I saw a breakdown of that, of those video segments, and I think it was either Comics Alliance or Comics Beat or one of those. They counted the number of times they said the word new in the videos, and it, you know, was in well into the multiple dozens. So I think they were saying, I think they want us to know this is new and different. Yeah. So I don't know. It's all a lot of talk right now, isn't it?
It is. Come September or come August 31, when the first issue of the new Justice League is released, which is the first title to kick this whole relaunch off, there'll be I'm tempted to just get all 52 because I'm curious.
See, that's it. I reckon most of these people who are going to be demonstrating will also be the ones who will be buying all 52 issues.
Yeah, even if it's just for something to complain about. But, I mean, it is bold. But as the month has gone on, my initial reaction was to possibly join those protesters.
It's turned out to be less bold than what we initially had been led to believe, I think.
Yeah, that's true. Green Lantern, Batman is pretty much not changing at all.
Yeah.
Superman is getting rid of his undies, which he should have a long time ago, and Kara's or Superman, Wonder Woman, Black Canary are covering their legs, which is good in the age of...
I don't mind the Wonder Woman, new Wonder Woman outfit. I know you're not a fan of Superman's armor.
No, that does make sense. Yeah, he's got kind of knee pads and stuff, and he's invincible.
Well, think of the number of times someone's walked up to him with kryptonite.
Yeah,
and that's when just a little bit of armor would have come in handy at that stage.
Yeah, that's the few comments that have been made. I mean, he's always losing his powers. he's a god figure, so you kind of have to do that to make him interesting. And
it's his insurance, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is he going back to leaping, or is he still flying? Oh wait, no, they couldn't do leaping. They'd have to pay the Siegel and Shuster estate some money then.
That is true, the creator of Superman, because he was only leaping in his first year or so, I think. I don't think he actually flew until the radio series.
Yeah, so whenever they talk about take these heroes back to their roots, most people don't really mean that, otherwise they'd want to see Superman leaping instead
of... Yes, well, and he wouldn't be fighting aliens, he'd be punching wife beaters and corruptions.
I'm pretty sure that was first brought in with the Max Fleischer cartoons, where he was fighting robots and so forth, and the Fleischers... Max Fleischer, I think his brother as well, they decided it was more dynamic to have him flying than it would be leaping, so they just animated him flying and said, to hell with the comic. So, and then that kind of, it looked great, so they took it on board for the comics.
I think he'd originally jump on phone wires, wouldn't he, on the phone lines, that's how he'd get along, which is pretty cool when you think about it.
So he's got super strength and he's very, very light and graceful. Kind of like Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That went nowhere.
Any other news?
That's all I had. I mean, you mentioned the Justice League, and it looks like the roster has been confirmed, because you might want to mention who these people are, because half of them I don't know who they are.
All right, let me get my current previews and have a look at it.
While you're doing that, I'll just describe the picture. It's kind of got the core members in the middle, and the picture's by Jim Lee, and if I've got to say, it's some of the worst... the worst of superhero art. Like, all the characters have identical bodies and they're all the same height, they're all the same proportion.
That is true.
Build. Superman's George just Perez. As built as Flash and Green Lantern and Superman, and like, that makes no sense to me.
George Perez does crowd scenes a lot better, and he gives all the women different hair colors and hair styles and eye colors.
But it's having like dudes, even if you look at like a lineup of bodybuilders, they'll all have really different bodies still. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's a good point.
Different muscles pop out on different body types. So I just wish superhero comics would, you know, it's like they learn to draw one type of body and then they just change the outfit on them.
Yeah. Well, that's one reason why I like Alex Ross, like he always does Aquaman and Flash, like with big muscular legs, Batman with big strong back, because those are the muscles they use. But yes, so the Big Seven are represented in the Justice League, so as you said, all with new costumes. We've got Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Batman, Bruce Wayne, Cyborg, who is the African-American guy, who's Cyborg.
Played by Shaquille O'Neal or something? Or that's Steel?
Steel. replacement.
Okay, go on. Sorry.
I missed that joke. Yeah. The Flash and Aquaman. So usually, if it was the traditional seven, you'd have Martian Manhunter in the play, the green alien, shape-shifting alien in the place of Cyborg. But DC are really putting a push on diversity these days, so they want an African-American in there. So Cyborg graduates from the Teen Titans to that Justice League, and Martian Manhunter is going to be in the Stormwatch series superhero team anyway.
Hmm. Okay.
So yeah, written by Geoff Johns and art by Jim Lee.
Yeah. See, it's interesting how they cut out like the one minority that no one cares about, you know, to push the agenda of the other minority that's sort of become okay to have in your comics. You know what I mean? So poor Martian Manhunter. There's little Martian kids these days who have no positive role models in comics. And I think this is a negative blow for equal rights in imaginary superlands.
The National Martian Advancement Society will make a formal complaint, I'm sure. I don't know. It's interesting. Cyborg's an interesting character, and he's got a pretty pivotal role in the current Flashpoint miniseries for DC. So,
plus, he looks like you could sell a lot more toys with that dude rather than true. Martian Manhunter.
So how many arm attachments could he have?
Oh, yeah. You could have a battle tank that he plugs into. He is just like printing money, this guy.
You could
guy.
Turn him into like a karaoke microphone even.
Oh, so he can transform. That would impinge on someone else's copyright, I believe.
He can't, but...
That's enough on that. I think we should get into Swamp Thing.
Swampy. Swamp Thing. You are amazing. You fight everything.
Nasty. Swamp Thing. What you just heard was the TV show introductory theme to a quickly cancelled cartoon series based off of Swamp Thing, the fairly misunderstood DC then Vertigo character, and he's one of those characters who's had on and off series that get dropped for various reasons, usually to do with sales, and so most people feel like they've vaguely seen the guy before, but they might not know a lot about him. But he's one of the sort of first books that Alan Moore became famous for sort of doing and bringing a kind of mature edge to, and he's had quite a long history since he was introduced in the 70s. I was sort of wondering, Chris, were you really familiar with the Swamp Thing character before we decided to do this episode?
I certainly didn't realise he had a cartoon series, but I think I always kind of thought him and Man-Thing, who's the kind of Marvel equivalent, were kind of similar. And and then I was actually just doing a bit of research, and apparently they kind of debuted about the same time.
That's true,
in the comics. So Len Wein, who also created or co-created Wolverine and a whole bunch of other characters, I believe he created Swampy.
Yep.
With Bernie Wrightson, and it was basically just a one-off story, wasn't it, in their House of Secrets, which was like an anthology horror series that DC were doing in the 70s. And then apparently that caught on quite well, so DC asked them to do a ongoing series.
That's right,
And that's where until this is before Alan Moore, the bearded writer who's done a lot of stuff, we should explain it, Alan Moore is, I guess. So he's written The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, From Hell, a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but before he came along.
Watchmen, V for Vendetta, we should mention some that people have heard of.
He's not a traditional. It's interesting that he's had a couple of films, TV series, cartoon.
Yeah.
He's even been in some video games. He's kind of like a Frankenstein monster, just kind of...
Yeah, he's one of DC's kind of supernatural characters, and they don't have too many, like Etrigan would be another one. I mean, a lot of their supernatural characters kind of got pushed to the side a little bit at a point, say after the 70s, and Swamp Thing was one of the few ones to stick around, and that was because of, his tenure with Alan Moore, I'd say. But just kind of to roughly give people a feeling, yeah, Bernie Wrightson is kind of a master of horror, and he designed this weird kind of swamp creature, but I think the face is quite distinctive with that very inverted V ridgeline coming down from his nose to his face, so he's got a distinct silhouette at all times, which I think is a key design element. And, I mean, there's pieces of, you know, Creature from the Black Lagoon and, you know, those kind of monsters from a swamp, you know, and that kind of New Orleans, oh boy, don't go into the swamp. But Swamp Thing kind of, I think they transcend that in later issues. I mean, the 70s series was more of an adventure thing. And it wasn't until the 80s and the reasonable success of a film spin-off of the 70s comic that DC wanted to, well, let's relaunch this comic and keep this momentum going. And, yeah, they hired two guys called Martin Pascoe and Dan Mishkin, who sort of in 82 they began the new Swamp Thing. Oh, it was a Wes Craven film.
Directed by Wes Craven, which is, and apparently it's kind of different from the usual kind of films that he wanted to prove that he could kind of say, Wes Craven's like the Freddy Krueger guy, isn't he?
Yeah, that's the guy, yeah.
So a lot of his films have been remade as of late. Yeah, and then there was a sequel in 1989.
With Heather Locklear. The original one had Adrienne Barbeau, who's very familiar to me because she's on Carnivale, and she was also the voice of Catwoman. Yeah, which I thought was fascinating.
In Batman the Animated Series.
Yes, we should mention. Not the Catwoman film with Halle Berry. All right. The fan film. I'm going to call that a fan film from now on.
I don't think anyone was a fan of Catwoman who made that film.
No one involved in that film cared either. Yeah. But yeah, I've not seen either of these Swamp Thing films. I don't know if you've ever caught them on TV or anything, but I've got to say, they don't look good.
No, they don't seem very enticing, do they? They seem kind of bland.
Fairly cheap looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when I saw the trailer for the first one, I thought it was Robert Zadar under the Swamp Thing makeup, because if you look him up, he has a very distinctive chin, and you'll see what I mean if you Google Robert Zadar, Z-D-A-R, and you'll see him straight away, and it should be one of those guys who were like, oh, that guy from that thing. Like, you won't be able to place him.
I remember seeing him on the covers of VHS.
Yes, he's a VHS superstar. Bottom shelf. Yeah. But that's what little we know about this Swamp Thing film. Really, I think it takes a lot of liberties with the comic. There wasn't a whole lot there to begin with. It was Swamp Thing began as this scientist who was working in his bio kind of laboratory, so he's isolated away from things, and he gets involved with this other scientist who wants to kill him and steal his research. He gets lit on fire, and so he plunges into the swamp, and all his chemicals kind of mix with him, and certain dodgy evil scientist things happen, and he emerges from the swamp as Swamp Thing, and that's kind of the genesis of the idea. So nothing too groundbreaking there.
And I didn't realize until I was doing a bit of research for this, that because I always thought Alec Holland, I always thought Alan Moore created Alec Holland, who's the scientist that you mentioned, but it wasn't. He was the original character. But there was one before Alec Holland as well, apparently.
The one that Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson created was a different character. I think that was set like in the 1930s. So
Alex Olsen.
Alex Olsen, that's right. And then when they relaunched it in the second series, and that's in 82, Martin Pascoe created the
Alec Holland, and they brought it into the current day, as you said.
That's right, the modern day setting. So,
Alan Moore has apparently he's also done like other, and so in order to kind of rectify the Alex character and the Alec character, he kind of created this mythology to say the Swamp Thing is like a reincarnation, and there's been a few different ones over the generations.
Yeah, Alan Moore introduced some stuff that was pretty sort of complicated, not just to resolve that, but to also kind of make Swamp Thing more interesting. The Martin Pascoe and series kind of is about Swamp Thing's kind of on the trail of this girl who might be on, she might go out to destroy the world, so he's following her, and he's involved with this guy called Anton Arcane, who's like this spider man crossed with spider dude who uses magic, and that stuff's all right. That's I don't have as much experience with that early part of Swamp Thing. But when Alan Moore at that point in the series, it was pretty getting ready to cancel it due to low sales, so they brought on Alan Moore, and he decided, okay, I'm gonna kind of ignore the last couple of issues and do my own thing. So yeah. he brings in certain elements of it. We should mention Swamp Thing has a girlfriend who's sort of slowly introduced to it as well. And she has sort of startling white hair. Abby, I think is her name. I'm terrible at this. Yeah. But he changed Swamp Thing from being just Alec Holland turned into a Swamp Thing to being a swamp that, like, a disembodied swamp creature that thinks it's used to be Alec Holland.
Yes,
that's probably sounds more complicated than it is.
He's like a plant elemental that has the memories of Alec Holland.
And it's interesting, like, he doesn't just reveal that in like a three panel the origin of Swamp Thing. It slowly unravels over the course of Alan Moore's run, like, because Swamp Thing doesn't know what he is either. So yep. He's sort of on the hunt for working out what am I. Why do I have these powers? Am I who I think I am? And the moment when he works out that he's not actually who he thinks he was, Alec Holland, he has a, you know, existential crisis of, oh, I am a monster. I just think I'm a man. Because the idea is the kind of swamp chemicals, so forth, kind of took on elements of this memory of this decaying corpse of this dead man. So, yeah, there's a parliament of trees which he goes to. That's kind of like, and that's where he works out that he's just the first in a line of swamp things, who, as you mentioned, involve also the Alec...
Alex
Olson, thank you. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, that character and several others who kind of popped up here and there. There was a few in there, I think, that Alan Moore also made up so they could go back and have flashbacks of these other characters. And they did eventually. So Alan Moore's run's quite entertaining. There's standout issues for me. I mean, there's a great part where there's these vampires who have been flooded underneath running water, and as we know, vampires can't cross running water, so as they're kind of submerged under there, they can't leave, and they start to breed like fish, and it's quite disgusting. So, like, he blends those two things quite uncomfortably. He plays on the werewolves changing kind of under full moon with female menstrual cycles, that kind of thematics. Like, he throws in some really kind of interesting stuff, which sort of seems like, oh, if no one's thought of that before, I wonder why no one's thought of that before. But he has a good touch for dialogue and kind of giving you twists that are interesting and unusual facets on characters which could be just one-dimensional. And this was kind of America's first real look at Alan Moore, I'd say, because before this he worked on Judge Dredd, 2000 AD, that kind of thing. Yeah, this was his first kind of ongoing American series, and he distinguished himself because Swamp Thing, I believe at that point, they decided we're going to ditch the Comics Code Authority sticker and market this straight to adults. And it was the first American comic to do so from the mainstream publishers anyway, which I thought was sort of distinguishes it. If you've noticed, it's kind of hard to find copies of Swamp Thing in trade. That's kind of no accident. DC have had a bit of a history with Alan Moore.
Yes.
And that's a whole episode within itself. But things were said that can't be unsaid. They're not on amicable terms. So DC's been reluctant to publish these works in their kind of original form. But they also know that it's a lot of money, so they eventually give in. At the moment, you can get, I think, the first four volumes of his run in hardback. And then once Alan Moore's run ran out. Actually, there was a comic I lent you, and that was during Alan Moore's run. Do you want to quickly mention that?
Yeah, I actually read two, and I think these are the first ever two Swamp Thing comics that I've ever read in my whole life. So the first one that I had was from the DC Universe Stories of Alan Moore, which collects, as you imagine, the DC Universe Stories of Alan Moore. So this is from DC Comics Presents number 85, and it's from the year 1985 with Alan Moore, with art by Rick Veitch. And it's actually quite interesting. So Clark Kent attends a press conference about a meteor that's just landed on Earth. It has a microscopic fungus on it that scientists want to study. So Clark looks at it and knows that it's with his microscopic vision that it's Kryptonian. He also starts losing his powers throughout the day. And as he goes to bed that night, he has hallucinations of his empty Superman costume talking with his MD Clark clothes.
Yeah.
So he gets the meteorite from the scientist to examine it to find an antidote, as Superman, so he doesn't want to lose his powers. And for some reason, he wants to die alone. This is Superman.
Mm-hmm.
So he drives because he doesn't want to end up flying and then lose the ability to fly. Land.
On That'd a, be a way to go.
Yeah. So he drives as Clark Kent, as an unshaven, ragged-looking Clark Kent. He drives south. He crashes his car. It explodes. Swamp Thing finds him kind of knocked out in the forest. And then Clark hallucinates from this fungus that he's amongst all the extinct species on Krypton. So that's a pretty cool scene.
Okay.
Swamp Thing, because he has kind of Swamp Thing has contact with nature and stuff, I guess. So he tried it. He touches this fungus to try and communicate with this fungus, with this Kryptonian fungus. And then Swampy eventually goes to Krypton in his own mind. Superman goes nuts and starts burning the jungle with his heat vision. Swampy calms him down and says, you know, if you, the more energy you exert, you're going to spread the fungus disease within you. So he calms him down. Superman wakes, he sleeps in the jungle. He wakes up and he's all better and Swamp Thing goes on his way. Okay. But, yeah, it was actually pretty interesting. There's a few different elements in there, you know, like the extinct species from Krypton, Superman gradually losing his powers throughout the day. And it's, it was pretty good. I liked it. Yeah, the other one that you said I'll quickly mention was...
Before we get into that one, I'll just sort of quickly explain kind of the extent of his powers and what Swamp Thing's deal is, because, as you mentioned...
He can't talk, can he?
He can. So you said you couldn't talk.
No, he can.
Yeah, he can talk. He can talk. He can talk like a man. At least he could after the 70s. In his original appearance, I'm pretty sure he couldn't. But you know, in the Alan Moore days, he definitely could. When he first started, he thought he was just kind of. He's vaguely got kind of this superhuman strength kind of elements. But he also, he's in contact with the green at all times, which is kind of all vegetation on Earth, really, at any time. And he kind of controls it subconsciously, so he can make things grow, he can make things die, he can, you know, the typical kind of, if you imagine poison ivy sort of stuff, but he's much more than that. He isn't just controlling vines to attack people, because he isn't really just one dude, and that might not be clear from one of the comics I sent you, but he is kind of a disembodied entity, so at any point he can kind of abandon his body and grow a new one. And yes. The moment when he learns that is through John Constantine, who is introduced in the pages of Alan Moore's Swamp Thing. That's the first appearance of the Constantine character. Another notable feature of the Swamp Thing character. But and through Constantine, he kind of learns a bit more about what his deal is, because Constantine's still shocked that Swamp Thing's walking everywhere. And he's like, what are you doing? Like, it's not even teleporting. You don't need this body. You aren't of this kind of reality, and those kind of revelations for the reader as well as Swamp Thing is what made it really a blast to read, and I'm sure at the time to follow from a, you know, issue to issue basis, because he was just throwing so much in there. And as I mentioned, he has a human girlfriend who's kind of had to come to terms with the fact that, one, he is actually a monster who just thinks he used to be a human and then doesn't think he used to be human. And that's kind of a topic that Alan Moore's interested in, because certain characters don't react positively to it, which I believe is the general gist of the conflict in the other Swamp Thing comic you read this week.
Yeah, that was Swamp Thing 53 from 1986 by Alan Moore by John Totleben.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically, so Swamp Thing is turning Gotham City into this kind of huge garden, because we discover at the first few pages that his human lover, who you mentioned, the white-haired Abigail Cable, is facing the courts, and all we know is she's facing the courts for some weird sexual thing. They don't explain why.
They call it like a sexual perversion, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
And from your point of view, I mean, it's great that you're coming new to it, because so is Batman in this story. If you're going to do something in Gotham, you got to expect Batman to jump in.
Yes, he does go up.
Yeah.
They're also, Swamp is kind of going on a rampage in Gotham, because he's angry that his lover has been taken captive by the courts. And then the cops of Batman are showing that Swamp Thing's never shown this much power or hatred towards humanity before. And there's this cool bit where, so basically Gotham's like a jungle everywhere. There's no traffic or anything.
It's interesting because he doesn't kill anyone. He just kind of grinds Gotham to a standstill.
Yeah, no one can kind of leave or, you know, whatever, or enter. So, there's this policeman And he takes a bite of this sweet potato, and then God, he has nightmarish visions. So the people don't eat the sweet potatoes. Just see him leave it on the ground. Just leave him there.
And that's something that was in a previous. You can refer to it in our episode on drugs. I talk about the issues where that root vegetable brings out either if you're a positive person, it's going to bring out positive sexual fantasies. If not, well, you'll have horrible nightmares. And that is how Abigail and Swamp Thing end up. Kind of mating in a beautiful issue of Alan Moore's Swamp Thing, and that's probably one of the ones I'd lend the most to people because it's pretty spectacular to watch, this kind of hallucinogenic love scene. Anyway.
There's some pretty trippy bits in that, but I'll get to that in this issue. Lex Luthor, Superman bad guy, shows up and he gives these criminal leaders of Gotham a kind of scrambler gun to kind of shoot at Swampy so to kind of kill his connection and basically defeat him. There's this bit where Batman wants to meet Swampy, so he drives this massive Batmobile. It kind of looks like the one from Dark Knight Returns. It looks like a tank. He drives this big Batmobile through the forest, and he takes on Swamp Thing with a flamethrower, but then Swamp Thing, as you said, multiplies.
Yeah.
He's more than one body, so he grows a few different versions of himself, and he opens a can of whip butt on Batman.
Yeah.
And then there's these kind of hippies in Gotham who are like, they want to meet Swamp Thing and follow him, and they really think he's awesome. So Swamp Thing gets tired of waiting for the courts to decide what to do with Abigail. So he uses all the vegetation in Gotham, and he becomes this big, like, skyscraper-sized hulking brute.
Yeah.
Cool. He's got, like, trees for limbs, and it's not a complete body either, but it's pretty freaky.
It's like a skeleton version of Swamp Thing, but enormous.
Yeah, and then we eventually find out halfway through the issue that Abigail was arrested because of her sexual perversion, because she, as you mentioned, had sexual relations with a non-human.
Yes.
I.e. through Swamp Thing's vegetable junk.
And Batman didn't know this before he got involved in the case, and when he finds that out, he reacts as you might expect.
Well, there's an interesting bit where Batman says, you know, we shouldn't kind of judge him or judge her because, you know, there's lots of characters running. What about Hawkman or Metamorpho?
He kind of warns the mayor, doesn't he? He gives him a bit of a threat.
What about what's his name from Metropolis? Because this is you've got to remember, this is 1986 when the DC universe had just been rebooted.
Mm-hmm.
So Superman was new and Batman was new. So Batman was like, well, if you pick on Abigail for having sex with a non-human, what about all these other superpowered beings that are running around?
Yeah.
They've got to be having the one-night stands and whatever.
Yeah, they might not take kindly to that kind of judgment. Yeah.
Yes. So Batman negotiates Abigail's release, and he meets Swamp Thing at the courthouse. There's a big crowd that's kind of looks happy. The criminals shoot Swampy with Luthor's gun and fire napalm at him, and then he has flashbacks about his death as Alec Holland in the laboratory.
Yeah.
Swamp Thing dies, Abigail cries and hugs Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good way to end because there are like great trippy visuals and lots of overlapping panels.
Yeah.
Swamp Thing's speech and narration is very philosophical and poetic.
Yeah.
And then it ends, Swamp Thing is dead, but I imagine he'd come back somehow in the next issue.
Well, it's great that you read that one because that's actually probably the first Swamp Thing comic I read. And
I really enjoyed it, actually.
Yeah, it's a nice to sort of get a feeling of a character from another character's perspective, you know, take him out of the Louisiana kind of comfort zone and put him somewhere where he doesn't belong, and you sort of see the extent of his powers where he's basically indestructible, except in this case where they separate him from the bullets kind of have this frequency or whatever that kind of it destroys that body, but it means the spirit can't create a new body. It's kind of stuck. That's the idea to kill him. Yeah. And in the issue that follow, Alan Moore actually takes him into space. He can't regenerate on Earth, so he regenerates up there. and he sort of, there's an issue later on, and they still hasn't been collected in the hardcover editions yet, where he goes to this planet where it's just kind of moss and stuff, and he makes duplicates of all the people he loved on Earth. So there's like vegetable versions of Abby walking around, and you know, in a touching Alan Moore kind of way. I mean, yeah, Alan Moore's run did eventually run out on the comic. Rick Veitch, who was one of the Alan Moore's artists, took over in terms of scripting, and he continued it in a similar kind of vein. And during that time, Swamp Thing also guest starred in Neil Gaiman's Black Orchard, which is the comic he did with Dave McKean. And Veitch's term on the character kind of ended in a very uncomfortable standoff between him and DC. Basically, DC refused to publish the next comic, issue 88, I believe. Michael Zulli, who's the artist at the time, had already done about, well, most of the art, they said. He'd finished it. And then they said, we're not publishing it because it featured, well, Jesus Christ was in it. He was sort of recasted as Swamp Thing was the man who offered water to him on the cross.
Okay.
Yeah. But apparently at the time there was all the controversies from Martin Scorsese's film, The Last Temptation of Christ. So they basically said, look, we don't want anything that could even be a tiny controversy. So Rick Veitch quit. And the other artists who were looking to take over from Rick Veitch, which was actually Neil Gaiman and Jamie Delano, decided out of solidarity that they wouldn't take over the title. So we almost lived in a world where instead of working on Sandman as his first major work, Neil Gaiman could have been on Swamp Thing. Yeah. And you can definitely see shades of Swamp Thing in a book like Sandman. And I think if you're a fan of Sandman, I think there's a lot that you'll enjoy in Swamp Thing. And it's not kind of your typical, by no means is it your typical superhero comic. And it has that kind of vibe of the literary comic. And they tried remaking the character again after that point. Nancy A. Collins rewrote a lot of the elements of the character. Grant Morrison had a very short four-issue arc where Swamp Thing was split into two. So Alec Holland and Swamp Thing, which seems familiar to something that's happening currently in the Search for Swamp Thing, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. Yeah. There's Brian K. Vaughan eventually worked on it, Andy Diggle, quite a few recognizable names, but they kept trying to relaunch the series in 2001 and that didn't really last. Same thing in 2004. And then it got, you know, cancelled again. There was Swamp Thing's daughter kind of took over the, I don't know if you'd call it a mantle, but yeah. But, and then finally, we've been seeing Swamp Thing brought up again in the Search for Swamp Thing under DC. And
Should we talk about the current status of old Swampy?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so Brightest Day was the big DC comic series that had a whole bunch of characters, good and bad, coming back to life. The last couple of issues, 23 and 24, we had John Constantine show up. Mm-hmm. Keanu Reeves played in the what was the film called again?
The film was called Constantine, but the comic's called Hellblazer.
The film's called Constantine. Yeah, so he shows up, as does Swamp Thing as well, in the last couple of issues, showing that, as we suspected, these two early Vertigo characters have been incorporated into the main DC universe.
Mm-hmm.
And we should point out that the previous catalogue is out this week, and you'll note that coming out in September, with all the other 52 or 51 relaunches, is Swamp Thing number one, written by Scott Snyder with art cover by Yannick Paquet. And the description is, one of the world's most iconic characters has returned to the heart of the DC universe, and every step he takes will shake the foundations of the earth. Alec Holland has his life back, but the Green, capital G, as you explained, has plans for it. A monstrous evil is rising in the desert, and it'll take a monster of another kind to defend life as we know it. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in Swamp Thing and his new status, you should order this for it comes out in September. But I think both of us can agree that Brightest Day Aftermath, the Search for Swamp Thing number one, first part of a three-issue miniseries that came out last week, we both didn't enjoy it much at all.
Yeah, this is one you lent me because I was curious, well, what are they doing with Swamp Thing, as well as the John Constantine character who they're rolling back into the main DC universe, which we'll see in the relaunch. Yeah, I mean, this comic, for one, it was entertaining for me because I did a little exercise where I counted the number of ads versus the number of comic pages. It was 20 pages of comic and 21 pages of ads, plus one letter page thing.
That is a bit, that's more unusual because DC in the last couple of weeks have been running these
Subway commercials.
Subway ads. that takes up quite a few pages of ad space that would normally be there.
Ads, they're not comic pages. They're told in comic form, but anyone who tries to tell me those aren't ads is wrong.
They are actually.
Yeah.
So this series is written by Jonathan Vanken with art by Marco Castiello.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, the reviews online haven't been too kind. And I've only read a few Constantine issues in my life that you've lent me. And reading this, just got John Constantine in this series, seemed like a different character.
Yeah.
And he said Plonker, Geezer, and Mate.
Yeah, he was talking kind of in a cartoonish way.
Yes, it's over the top. And I looked in, and Vankin is an American writer.
Yeah.
And whereas traditionally John Constantine, who features heavily in this Search for Swamp Thing debut, is written by an English writer. So I guess there's a bit more subtlety and less stereotypical language.
Yeah, I think in this issue, for myself in particular, when they finally showed Swamp Thing, I was very disappointed. And it kind of made me miss John Totleben and Steve Bissett, who Steve Bissett really kind of shaped the new look of the Swamp Thing character. I mean, Bernie Wrightson really, you know, crafted that, and he's immaculate. But it's kind of when I think of Swamp Thing, I've got that image of that kind of 80s Zulli-esque, that's Michael Zulli-esque, kind of look. And seeing Swamp Thing rendered in that kind of new, almost, I'd describe it as manga-ish. I'd definitely describe it as manga-driven, kind of modern comic, superhero comic style. It's kind of disconcerting, and it's almost not in a way that I can explain, but he doesn't look as imposing or as, he doesn't seem to have mass. it's not an easy thing to explain to someone who hasn't read the comics, but maybe you'd know what I mean after reading that Batman Superman kind of crossover with Swamp Thing, and then compared to this new one, he seems to not
more streamlined. He's had a bit of weight loss.
Yeah, a bit of weight loss. Like, what was interesting about Swamp Thing is, yes, he's got a pretty recognizable silhouette, but there's always roots and bits of moss and crap streaming off him. Mm-hmm. You know, like he's quite a sort of wriggly mass of green, basically, and it changes. And I'm sure they'll lose this in the new ones, but in spring he'd have flowers coming off him, you know, little things like that. He'd actually kind of, and they'd comment on this, he'd smell really bad in autumn, you know, because all the trees were rotting and little pieces, and he looked like it as well. He didn't look as good in the autumn comic issues of Swamp Thing. And I guess there's sort of... That's quite unusual for any kind of comic to look at that. And I sort of feel like there's almost a standardizing of his look and his powers that we'll see as he's being reabsorbed into the main DC universe. Because he's one of those characters who's never quite been defined what he can do, mostly because he doesn't know what he can do. And he's smart enough to know not to try because he could do some serious damage. I guess that's the idea of what we're meant to be seeing with the Search of Swamp Thing, but it hasn't been too impressive so far, anyway.
So talk about what happens in this first issue?
Yeah.
Well, it starts in London, and you've got John Constantine hanging out with his cab driver mate, Chaz, who I think was played by Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf, yeah, that surprised me.
The film. John Constantine believes the Swamp Thing, who's been missing for a while, he's talking to him through the wood fibres in the day's newspaper. So I thought, that's kind of an interesting idea. So he goes to his closest botanical garden to kind of commune the Swamp Thing, and but basically the vines end up attacking him. So him and Chaz run. He goes to Gotham to find Swamp Thing while Batman and Commissioner Gordon examine this corpse of the criminal. He's like stuck in a tree with a big branch going through his gut.
Mm-hmm.
Constantine says that it's interesting because he says he respects Batman because like him, he doesn't have superpowers and he kind of uses what he has.
Yeah.
Somehow he invades the Batmobile and I think he drugs Alfred, but it's actually Dick Grayson as Batman, not Bruce Wayne here. Constantine takes him on a trip to the Green where they see Swampy, so there's a bit of a hallucination, which is a theme I'm noticing in all my Swamp Thing reading. And then Swamp Thing attacks Constantine, and Batman takes Constantine to Zatanna, the fishnet-wearing, top-hat-wearing magician.
Mm-hmm.
And she says that they've met before. They're like ex-lovers or something. And I was like, what, really?
Zatanna is one of those characters who, you know how like when DC formed Vertigo, Swamp Thing and Hellblazer sort of migrated over to the Vertigo universe and they stopped interacting with DC, Zatanna was one of the few that would actually cross. She would appear in both Vertigo comics and DC comics. Etrigan's probably the only other one I could think of. So she would have like a one-off relationship with, you know, Constantine and little Tim Hunter from Books of Magic and so forth. But then she'd also be involved in various crises of a certain number of Earths. I don't know how many, you know, so, I guess I wasn't sure if that would be a new surprise to you or not, but, yeah, for me, it's like, of course they have a history, and it would have been shocking if they didn't mention it in this comic. Yeah. Yeah. But it's hard to comment. It feels like I'm almost not used to this kind of decompressed comic book storytelling, which is popular now, where not a whole lot happens. Like, panels seem a lot bigger. There's a lot more time being spent. And then when you look back on one issue of comic, I'm still kind of sure, like, oh, what happened? Okay, he met Batman and talked to Batman, and he's looking for Swamp Thing, and that was one issue. I'm like, come on, guys. You could tell a whole story there.
They've got two more issues to wrap this whole thing up.
Yeah, it's almost like it's only just started, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess we're now looking at a point with the DC relaunch that we're going to be seeing new Swamp Thing. Is this a title you're at all curious about?
I am. I wouldn't imagine they'd be changing that much.
No.
Because he's quite a definitive character, especially considering where he started from in the 70s and what Alan Moore has done with him now.
Yeah.
He's so different, and you think that's the classical version of the character.
Mm-hmm.
If you were going to reboot Swamp Thing, I don't know where else you could go with it, really.
Mm. Yeah, I think I doubt they'll reboot too much. They might tweak a few little things. They might never mention his daughter, you know, those kind of things which most people don't know. But, I mean, Scott Snyder is taking over the writing of this. He's probably best known for American Vampire.
I think he's done some issues of Batman and Detective Comics as well.
That's right. And the artist on that will be Yannick Paquette, who might be familiar from, I think, Batman Incorporated?
Yes.
I've not been keeping with that comic, but that seems right to me. But I
think he has done superhero stuff, yes.
Yeah, but again, they're keeping it to it looks like a more modern style. They're not going for that kind of, I guess it's, I think of 80s something as kind of almost looking, not painterly, but pencil-y, like someone who really enjoys drawing, if that makes sense. Like, you know, Michael Zulli, I wouldn't call him painterly because you can feel the pencil marks on the page. And this is more ink style. And for me, the art's a big deal on these books. But I guess we don't even have a clue of what these new storylines are going to be. So I hope they find a way to make it work. And it's not like Swamp Thing doesn't belong in the DCU, because I think he worked great with, you know, Superman and Batman, if only for like a really fascinating contrast.
Yeah, it was an interesting collaboration, actually.
Yeah, it's very surprising to see him and Batman have anything that they could talk about. You know, you're like, what do you have in common? I guess they both got tragic backgrounds.
All good characters do.
Yeah, and that's probably enough words on Swamp Thing. You can find the trades of the Alan Moore work, which is probably the best place to start. And when you have those, definitely check out the Rick Veitch work, and if you can, track down some of the other work in the series.
Thanks for listening. As always, you can catch all our previous episodes on iTunes and also extrasequential.com. And also, you can befriend us if you're not our friend in real life. You can become our virtual friend on Facebook.
Yeah,
Facebook group there. My blog is Comic with Jesus, so I've got a few reviews and whatnot of stuff that I've been reading, and that's lately. Mm-hmm. Next week, we are going to flick through the previews catalogue that comes out monthly. So if you've been going to the comic shop this week, you would have seen the Justice League DC relaunch cover on one side and Witchblade 150. So it's a pretty landmark issue from them on the other side. So we're going to be talking about what you think. Well, we can't guess that. Well, we think you should order comics that will be coming out in September.
Are you going to be recommending a lot of number ones, Chris?
We'll try and avoid the DC relaunch as much as we can.
Some of the obvious ones,
But always with an eye to new series and perhaps hidden gems, so not go for the obvious ones. And I'm sure Maladin and I will have different choices as we usually do. Is there anything you'd like to mention before we let Swamp Thing end this episode?
And speaking of hidden gems, I'll be mentioning a few odd web comics and things that I've been tracking this last couple of months. And because we haven't done what we've been reading in a while, we'll probably slip in a couple of those, and you'll certainly get some recommendations for comics to read from there. Music for the show is normally from purgeandaudit.com, but as Chris mentioned, we're leading out with something a little bit different.
Yeah, this was apart from the Swamp Thing cartoon series in 1991, from 1990 to 93, there was a Swamp Thing live action TV series. And as was the want in those halcyon days, they'd always, well, not always, but generally start with a voiceover of the lead character kind of explaining the premise of the show, so you knew what was going on. So this is what Swamp Thing sounds like in his own gravelly, moth-covered lips. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next week.
Thanks, everyone. Stay green.
The swamp is my world. It is who I am. It is what I am. I was once a man. I know the evil men do. Do not bring your evil here. I warn you. Beware the wrath of Swamp Thing.